You know what I need?
Huh?
Well, what day is
This is Tuesday.
Tuesday?
Let me hear your voice.
Ah, this voice of yours is really something.
I really love the sound of your voice.
Your voice is really annoying.
God, your voice is annoying.
So which one is it?
So which is it?
Well, to each his own.
Is this the show?
That's usually what wakes me up.
You know what else wakes you up in the morning?
What is it?
It's showtime.
TSN 1200.
It is. How's it going? Welcome back. If you're just joining us, welcome to it. 9:12 here on this Tuesday morning. Much calmer day today than yesterday as the cleanup continues from one of the biggest one-day snowstorms that we've had. Now, the difference between, because we're getting into this, oh, we had 47.8 centimeters. What made yesterday's storm a little bit different in terms of an all-timer is that many storms are start one day and end the next day. And so in terms of one day snowfall, it's kind of spread over 2 days, if that makes any sense. So we've had storms in which we've had more snow, but because this storm started, 7 o'clock yesterday morning and was wrapped up by about 7 or 8 last night, it was all in one day, which is why when it was all said and done and they added it up, the 47.8 centimeters, the official amount measured at the Ottawa airport, made that the fifth biggest storm that we've had in Ottawa history. Three of the four that are more are from more than 100 years ago. And I'm not less, and I'm old. Mm-hmm. I wasn't here more than 100 years ago. But how much do we really believe the snow amount measure takers from like 1878? I mean, honestly, did they even have rulers then? Like, what are they? There's old Joshua.
Yeah.
I was right up. I put his fingers right down there to the ground, and it was past his elbow. I think I put that one at, they didn't have centimeters back then, however many inches that would be.
Yeah.
Like, are we really believing the measurements from the late 1800s?
Are you using body parts that you're lying about the actual size of?
Exactly.
I think you take a rock and a string and you drop it, and that's what you end up
is
doing.
Is that what you did?
Okay. Also, and this is, but that was the record. I looked this up. That is the fastest that we've had 47 centimeters in snow in Ottawa history.
Well, they had 21. They said there was 21 centimeters of the 47. Fell between 8 in the morning yesterday and 10 in the morning. Yeah. So we had 21 of this, almost half of the storm was in 2 hours. Remember when we brought Dave Poulin on and I just looked outside and I said, man, is it coming down now? Yeah. So that was, usually if you get like 5 centimeters an hour, that's a pretty good snow dump.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we had, I think, 12 in the 1 hour and 9 in the following hour. So that was a lot of snow in a small amount of time.
Epic.
Yes, indeed. So as we said, the crews are still going at it. They're still getting the texts from people that are saying, with you, JR. Still haven't got to my street yet.
Wow.
Now, I don't have an update from my street. Yeah. As of 5 a.m. this morning when I left, still did not have a plow down my street. Understand, I'm not, because many plow drivers texting in going, man, I've been at it since 3 a.m. yesterday. Okay. Still working away here.
Yeah.
So I'm not taking shots at anybody. I know they're working as fast as they can. I'll only say, under amalgamation, that back in the day when I lived in Kanata, and Kanata was Kanata and not part of Ottawa, and the mayor lived down the street and around the corner from me, my street was the first plowed every single time.
Wow.
And I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I never had an issue getting into work in those days.
You should have an app on your phone, JR, with a camera showing that, right?
Yeah, it's an outrage.
Did you see that beautiful video? The picture was stupid enough of the girl driving her car on the Rideau River.
Yes.
Did you see the actual video, though?
Yes. You know what? That is actually friends of ours, or is the person that submitted that to CTV.
Like, jumping. Wow. That car looked like, I thought they were in somewhere in Finland doing off-road racing.
Exactly. Like, she was estimated, I think they said that, and it's a girl, a woman, I'm not sure how old she was, going about 60 kilometers an hour on, and I know the river's frozen. Yeah. First of all, many things I wondered about that story.
Yeah.
First, where do you actually drive onto to get onto the river in the first place?
Yeah.
Because usually by the shore, and there's certain, if it's a protected area, it can freeze. Yeah. But there's a lot of areas, I think, where the ice is either non-existent or very, very, not very thick.
No, it's a great point, because you'd have different boat ramps, but generally, as you said, the weight of a car as you hit that part of it, and then you see kids out there playing on hockey rinks, and she's just buzzing along, and then...
And then it goes in, and then as it's sinking, she gets out, then decides, great time to take a selfie.
Yeah.
Gotta take a selfie.
Yeah.
Takes a selfie, and then, thank goodness, there were some people watching.
Yeah.
And what was it? They had a rope, and they threw a kayak out to her.
Is that really necessary? You know what?
Hang on, I'm not quite done yet. I need to get a few more shots.
Yeah, but I just personally, and I'm not, you know, thank God I wasn't there. That's where we're at. I would have reeled my kayak back in. like you've got to be kidding me. You're standing on. Now, I will say the way that she posed and, you know, doing that on the car, though, is somewhat epic. But at the same time, you obviously don't need any assistance at this point. So, hey, figure it out yourself and get out of there. And yeah, there's got to be way more to this darn story. And that was
somebody talked to her, either the neighbors that pulled her out in the first place and said she was unapologetic, said, oh, that was unbelievable. I'd do that again. Oh, so okay. she was all in. Now, that may have been uttered before the cops laid a dangerous driving ticket on her, which, when you get to your next insurance and she looked like a younger woman, when you start paying the extra money, maybe think twice.
I want to know when you're submitting the claim. I would really like to find out.
Maybe you're not. Maybe it was a beater, and I was like, I'm going to take this thing to the bottom of the river.
Maybe, but...
It looked pretty nice, at least from the front end that you could see when it was stuck.
It was yellow. I mean, with all due respect to people who have yellow cars.
Well, what if you saw Simmer's car in the river?
And then, again, I'd let that one
And that sunset hood that's, was just sticking out, out of the ice.
That's a collectible. That would be like on Pawn Stars. They'd be like, oh, my God. But, yeah, just all the, well, yeah, wow. That just was crazy.
You're out of words. Yeah, it
well,
was.
No,
it was,
yeah, and I want to know the backstory. Like, is this a wealthy person? And, you know, does she have to answer to anybody? I mean, if it is a beater, I mean, what, do you have a secondary car sitting there that you're good to go, right?
Not sure.
Might be tough to drive that secondary, too.
And then I'd like to think that, you know, did they tow that bad boy, or are they just going to wait until the river thaws out?
I think they showed it below the surface.
I think you let the fishies enjoy. It's a new home for the fishies.
Exactly.
And there's that next, as soon as you get out boating, and next thing you know, there's the old engine. Hey, another propeller gone because of her car.
yes, exactly. All right, 919. So Doug Ford, the Ontario Premier, who spent a bunch of time yesterday digging people out who were stuck in Toronto traffic yesterday using a very odd-looking shovel and very small shovel, but regardless, made for a good photo op, made sure all the television cameras and photogs were there. Guested on 580 CFRA earlier this morning, and this, I know this is non-sports related, but thought it would be of interest based on the times we're living in right now and the fact that we're under restrictions, pretty strong restrictions, including no fans at the Sens game tonight. But that may be about change. Here is the Premier earlier this morning on CFRA.
Well, some positive news. I believe we're going to make some announcements later this week about, you know, going back to other levels of restrictions.
All right. So there you go. So an announcement to come later this week, according to the Ontario Premier. It sounds like lifting some of the stronger restrictions that are currently in place.
Yeah, and for the middle of winter time, JR, that's just hopeful for the restaurants, obviously local businesses, and I think for a lot of people, get the gyms back open and hopefully get some Sens fans back as well. So,
the point for Sens fans and for hockey fans and 67s fans the same, you know, could as soon as a week from today when the Sens play their next home game, could we potentially have fans back in the stands as early as then?
Yeah, you know, you hope so. And from a Sens side, if whatever money that you've had to either hold on to, I don't think they've done any refunding. Do you start at least piling people into the building and start paying some bills? I mean, that's not been an easy go for the Senators last year and again this year. It's, that's been real tough for the Canadian teams and why they've delayed it long enough. Hopefully the timing kind of lines up perfectly where you get people back in the barn.
Interesting timing of that announcement as my son, the manager of the restaurant that he works at, got in contact with him yesterday and said, hey, we've got a couple of shifts for you at the end of this week.
Really?
Thursday and Friday.
Wow. Tipster.
I'm wondering if the restaurant, if they get a bit of a heads up of, hey, this is what's coming down, so 100%, you can prepare.
100% they do, because they have to order food, right?
Exactly.
Like, that's the big thing. Like, people wonder when they announce restrictions going in place, they're going, why do they announce it for 2 days from now? It's because they want to allow in, specifically restaurants in particular, to try to get rid of all the food that they've ordered in, right? That's the idea.
And they said he was not coming back until in restaurant dining returned.
Yeah. And so that was a tough one, like, for New Year's Eve, talking to some people and talking to my buddy that runs Broadway's out in North Manitick. It was just, hey, there's people that had spent $40,000 on New Year's Eve, and all of a sudden you got to shut down, JR. And, you know, you can pack some of that stuff away, but for a lot of it, it's just ends up being wasted money. So hopefully they all get back up and running. And like I said, I think for this time of year, I appreciate a little night out for a dinner or doing whatever, but certainly need to get back into the gym there.
A few people weighing in on text about back to the conversation about the woman. Driving along the Rideau River. Guy, she drove from Kempville, 30 kilometers on that ice. Where she went down is the shallowest part of the river. She got lucky because the car was at the bottom. That comes from Chris, who I think lives on the Rideau. From someone else from unsigned, got on the ice around Baxter Beach. Got a good run out of it. So that's from unsigned. So I'm not sure if Baxter Beach is. Is that Kempville area?
Not quite as far as Kempville. No, that's just kind of, is it on the other side of Vars?
Yeah. So, or Cars? I mean, but or is that Vars? There's a marina right there.
Yeah.
Only an auto area.
I think it's Vars.
No, I think it's Cars.
Is it Cars?
This is not a debate we need to have on the radio.
Vars is out towards East End, JR, Hammer, right?
Okay, so then Cars. Where the gliders go, that's back, because I go to Baxter Beach quite a bit.
She's trying to get to Mars from Cars.
But I still think it would be kind of hard to get down to the river.
How are you getting off? What was your exit plan?
I don't think there was one.
She hadn't thought it that far through.
She had to have been on something, though, right? I mean, did they get a chance to test her?
Not sure. Yeah, one would think. Absolutely, one would think, yeah. A lot of people weighing in as well.
I thought you'd have a co-pilot as well. Yeah. That's usually something you would have done with your buddy back in the day. I would have, for sure.
The idiot driving down the Rideau. There's no insurance for that. Only vehicles that are insured for off-road get that. She'll have to pay recovery fee and heavy environmental damage. Divers will go down, float the car up. Helicopters. We'll need to take it out. Wow. Ooh, the longer the car stays under, the more it costs.
That sounds pricey.
That sounds like an expert to me, and I'm going with it. So that does sound pricey.
Yeah, one of the nice things about the cold water, though, I've watched this quite a bit on the diving that they do, Jer, that'll be in mint condition because it's cold.
I'm sure she'll
I want to see the helicopter jet engine come in, pull this yellow car out. What I'm thinking is it more that she's going to have to pay for the removal of vehicle because it's a hazard, not because it's going to be salvageable, right?
She'll recoup all those fines through her TikTok subscription form.
Good point.
She'll get it all back.
Good point for you. Jesse and Embrun, I have tickets to the Oiler game on the 31st. I haven't heard from the Sens yet regarding a refund. Hopefully Uncle Doug opens things up so we can start watching some live Sens hockey. That's from Jesse. Yeah, that was one game I wondered about because I would think there's a lot of people very interested in watching Connor McDavid. So that game is a week from Monday, so 2 weeks ago from last night.
Okay.
So again, if things start to get lifted and maybe fans back as soon as next week, I don't think it's going to go from 0 to 100. I don't think it's going to go to close to right open, but I think we might get back up to maybe 50% capacity, which for a game like Edmonton, which I think would be a game that's going to be over half full already, right, in terms of sold tickets. They are going to have to figure out what they're going to do. I know that season ticket holders hold priority when they do have to restrict tickets, but after that, I don't know if it's a lottery, if it's or how they go about doing that, but I'm sure the Sens are very hopeful that more restrictions are loosened so that they can have more fans at a game like that.
Yeah, and for their season and for Montreal, I mean, it's not the competitive side of it, JR. Having to play a bunch of games, it could be a little tough on the athletes, but I think you use it as a test. And financially, like I said, you know, as it sits right now, exactly when your season's going to end and got to pay some bills.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, 925, continue to keep the text coming at 12-1200. When you text us, standard messaging rates apply. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll turn our attention to tonight's game, which we know will not have fans. So this will be the first game in Ottawa this year with no fans. Maybe, hopefully, fingers crossed, it'll be the only game. But if you had to pick out an opponent to be in town for a game with no fans, I'm sure if you asked the owner, probably this would be the team you'd pick. The Buffalo Sabres, Tuesday night, mid-January, day after a big snowstorm. Probably wasn't going to be a big draw anyway. Anyway, we'll set up tonight's game, which we'll have for you here on TSN 1200 when we return. Latest on the lineup, latest on Connor Brown, and we'll get into our TSN 1200 Tool and Equipment Store web poll regarding the Young Sens D. Who's got a future here and who maybe doesn't? And one other thing I want to get to before 10 o'clock. Where does Chris Pronger rate among all-time defensemen in the National Hockey League? Someone who we all know has suggested maybe higher at the top of the list or at the top of the list than maybe others would consider. Anyway, we'll get into that as well as we continue along here on a Tuesday morning. Glad you're with us on Sports Radio, TSN 1200. Hey, some breaking news for you this morning, especially if you're a fan of the Montreal Canadiens. Looks like they may have named their new general manager, and it is, I guess now, former player agent Kent Hughes. Elliot Friedman reporting, and I'm sure the insiders will be all over it here sooner rather than later. But Kent Hughes apparently will be the new general manager of the Montreal Canadiens. I think we all believe that Jeff Gorton basically will be calling the shots, but they need someone who speaks a little better French than Jeff to handle some of the day-by-day comings and goings with the Montreal media. But Kent Hughes, and we can go through his client list, which includes a few prominent Ottawa Senators in just a second. But did you have any dealings with Kent Hughes from your days back when you were in the league, or is he fairly new?
No, I didn't, JR. But I've known the name, and the name really came out as soon as Jeff Gorton was hired, so I don't think there's any big surprise. And also, I think has some ties to the Boston area along with Montreal. And so, yeah, I don't think this is any real big shocker. I thought it would lean towards, you know, maybe Darche or something else, but no surprise. And like I say, comes highly recommended. And I think you've seen former agents in the past, including Ray Shiro, Pierre Lacroix, who have come in and done a pretty good job, Mike Gillis in the National Hockey League. So I don't think anything crazy.
All right, so here's his client list. As we said, it's pretty good, and I believe he's from Montreal. That is the connection, because he has a lot of, in some cases, French-Canadian clients. Chris Letang is a Kent Hughes client. Patrice Bergeron. Darnell Nurse, who he got a very sweet contract from Edmonton, $9.5 million. Here's the Ottawa one. Drake Batherson, his agent was Kent Hughes. That's kind of going through some of the list. Colin White as well. So there's that Boston connection you talked about with him. And I want to say, Nick Paul. I knew there were three Ottawa Senators off the top of my head that were also connected to Kent Hughes. So there you go. So reportedly, the new general manager in Montreal is Kent Hughes. Just as an aside. What would happen, Simmer, to a player whose agent leaves the business? I'm guessing he, and I don't know whether he's just in it himself or he's got some assistants, he's part of a bigger group, but would you normally just slide to another agent under that umbrella, or would you become a so-called free agent as a player?
Well, no, technically, JR, you're linked to, in a sense, of whatever contract you're on. Drake Batherson is signed, so Kent Hughes is collecting the money the rest of the way. As to how that's handled, you'd never just, you would sell that, basically, right? Now, for the players, it could be a little different. They don't have to stay with the agency, but they're owed the fees. So Kent Hughes is directly going to collect those fees, even though he's general manager
for the
Montreal.
Rest of the contracts.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Like Drake Batherson, whatever deal. And let's say, for sake of argument, let's say it's 3%.
Yeah.
So he's paying 3% for the next 5 years or whatever it is to Kent Hughes. Yeah. Even though, now listen, you negotiated my deal.
Yeah.
I wish you kind of had gotten a little more money based on what I'm doing. But regardless.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you're not working for me for the next 5 years, but you're still going to get the trailer fees?
Yeah, you know, that's actually a great question, JR. Because,
you're not working for me.
Well, no, but technically the fee that is paid, now every agreement could be a little bit different, but basically the fee is that I negotiated the deal, right? I mean, for a lot of agents, they go to try to collect from the players, but yeah, that's really interesting what you present there. I'm just thinking off the top of my head that generally, and a lot of guys like Sergei Gonchar would leave guys in the middle of a contract and guys would take them on, but they also knew they weren't going to make any money with him. So, yeah, this is quite interesting to see how. But like I say, somebody's still getting the dough, but has he had this plan where he slides it over? Are the players comfortable with it? But like I said, realistically, whatever that company is, I guess to the point, they you owe them a set fee for each year of that contract right now. And I'm assuming Kent Hughes has probably had something set up.
Yeah. So there you go. And again, more details to be filled in on that. That had been... rumored his name was, I think, added to the list. I think they said Matthew Darche and Daniel Briere were the other two finalists I had seen out of a round of, what, about 8 to 10 initial interviews that had been done, including the likes of Patrick Waugh. There were a couple of, I think, Carolyn Ouellette, Canadian women's hockey player, was also interviewed. And people who know much more about it than I have suggested that some of the people interviewed may get an assistant general manager's role as well as part of the interview process going forward.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shy. And, you know, when you look at Kent Hughes, and I think in comparison, and I don't know Daniel Breer that well, Matthew Darche a little different, but Daniel Breer doesn't have much experience, JR, and I think Hughes is a smart hire. Jeff Gordon knows him very well. And then I wouldn't be shocked if Daniel Breer comes in as assistant GM. That kind of tidies things up and makes it as you have a former player versus an agent. And for Mr. Hughes, played for Lac St. Louis, one of the famed hockey programs here in Canada, and played Middlebury College in Vermont, which is a Division II school. So as I said, ties down through New England back to Montreal, and they're off and running now. You would sit back and wonder, start to roll up the sleeves and get to work. And the first thing is, you're on a collision course with the first pick overall. Do you just allow Double D to continue to work his magic behind the bench and get you the first pick overall, or do you make a coaching change? Yeah. That in itself is a tad of a dilemma in the sense of, first of all, who's available right now? Not a lot. I would probably either run it out the rest of the year or put Luke Richards or whatever in charge. You know what I mean? So we'll see what happens. But I'm assuming they're going to get to work here pretty quickly in Montreal.
Yeah, that, by the way, has now been confirmed by Montreal and Chris Johnson of TSN reporting it's a five-year contract. So I think that's fairly typical. Although as a first-time general manager, that's a big-time commitment right there. That's saying you're our guy. That's not a three-year kind of trial run. You're not really the boss anyway. 5 years is you're in it, and we're in it together here for the entirety of what will be an extensive rebuild.
Well, and here's two things. I'm already an established agent making good money if you want to take me away from this. And at the same time, this rebuild might only get started or really be in its rebuild in another 4 years, Jer. I mean, being realistic about all the deals that are on the books, there's only so much you do. And you get in any type of buyouts, you get in any deals on contracts, you're picking up money. Like I said, this is a long, long, I mean, it sounds crazy, but might be talking 2030 before the Montreal Canadiens. I mean, that's sincerely, like, there's a lot of cleaning up to do before you even start the rebuild.
Yep. As we went through with Mike Johnson, the discussions, you know, like Ben Sherratt, people are suggesting that Montreal could get a first rounder from a contender. So a late first round pick for Ben Sherratt, and he mentioned Brett Kulak. You know, are you going to get some kind of return on Kulak? Those are the easy ones. The UFAs that, you know, went through the playoff run last year, have some experience. And Ben Sherratt's a good, he played really well in the playoffs last year. Like, he's going to have some value for sure. It's these longer-term deals with the Brendan Gallaghers and the Josh Andersons and so many of them. Dvorak, who you just brought in at the price of a first-rounder. Even Jonathan Drouin's got another year. Like, Mike Hoffman, two more years. There are so many bad contracts. I mean, of all teams, I would think Montreal is going to be willing to buy out a lot of these contracts. But boy, if you look at buying out, let's say you can't, you want to get rid of Brendan Gallagher, like you can't trade that deal, you want to buy it out. I don't think they would do that. But you know, like, that's, you're looking at, if you're buying out a team, a guy who's got 4 and 5 years left, you're looking at 8 to 10 years of buyout. Like, that's going to come back and sit on your bottom line for the next decade. That's what makes this so difficult, what Kent Hughes and Jeff Gordon are now going to have to do to try to rebuild this team.
Yeah, and Petrie has completely fallen off. For a year ago, even on a deal like that, 4 years, JR, worried about. I think job number one, I guess, is what's going to happen with Carey Price. How are they going to do that? And one of the reasons it's, I think, good to hire an agent at times, JR, is that if you have the right hockey people, the one thing, and Bill Zito's another example recently, he's done very well. You know, being a negotiator as an agent is a lot harder than being a negotiator with a team, right? You got to feel the people behind you. As an agent, you're kind of out there working hard to establish what your player is worth. And let's also cue the rumors that Patrice Bergeron, his client, is a unrestricted free agent. He's going to return to Montreal.
There we go. Yes.
Yeah, but it's, you know, so it makes sense to that. But yeah, it's going to be, and I would assume on Carey Price is, hey, what could you get for Carey Price? And if it's a 3 to 5 year build, rebuild, why not just pick up half his freight, make it real appealing to teams, and then maximize your return that you're able to bring back for him?
All right. So again, the breaking news this morning, Kent Hughes, now former player agent, is the new general manager of the Montreal Canadiens, the 18th in club history, and amongst his clients, Chris Letang, Patrice Bergeron, and of interest to Ottawa Senator fans, Drake Batherson, Colin White, Nick Paul are all clients of Kent Hughes, who is now the general manager of the Habs. All right, 9:41. Much more on that throughout the day today here on TSN 1200. It is a Sens game night. They're taking on the Buffalo Sabres tonight at 7 o'clock. This is the first home game in more than a month. December 11th, they beat the Tampa Bay Lightning 4-0 in what was probably one of the more shocking scores we've seen in the entire league back on December the 11th. The Sens had, you know, had bottomed out about 10 days previous in a loss to Vancouver. Not a lot of people saw a shutout win over the Stanley Cup champions on the horizon. Regardless, that was the last home game until tonight. But tonight's game, no fans because of attendance restrictions here in the province of Ontario. Here's Thomas Chabot of the Sens talking about that.
Being completely honest, it's not great. Obviously, we love playing in front of fans, and we miss them a lot. And when you go into buildings like in the States and they're packed, obviously you feed a lot off crowds, and they bring such an amazing energy to the game.
So there you go. There's Thomas Chabot talking about tonight's game with no fans. And as he was going through that answer, and he goes, "Oh, when you play in the States," and I'm thinking to myself, when was the last time the Sens played a game in the U.S., right? Because they played the two games in Alberta, right?
Tampa?
Then they played the game in Toronto.
Yeah.
And before that, yeah, it was the Florida. It was against, actually, Tampa on December the 8th. It was about a week after they were here, right? Because they played Tampa twice within the space of a week. So it's been pretty much a month since the Sens have played a game again with an extensive crowd like they would have been down in Tampa.
Yeah, and tonight on a Tuesday, Jared, not going to be a huge one, but it is tough. And you come out as a player and you come out in warm-up and the tunes are going, and then all of a sudden you just come into a completely empty and sterile building. And I think that really works far more against the home team of, whatever crowd is there is a whole lot more fun than being empty.
Now, Hammer, you'll be producing tonight's broadcast with Dean and Gord, so no fans. And
crowd like mic hot.
Yeah, and we like to bring the atmosphere of what it sounds like to hear the puck on the glass. We like to hear, to a certain extent, the
Come
players' conversation.
Yeah.
But as we know, often the crowd can sort of drown out some of the more interesting language that is sometimes used on the sheet
swears.
Of ice. So with no crowd tonight, what is the over-under on the amount of swears we'll hear on the TSN 1200 broadcast?
The over-under? I'm going with 10.
10?
Five of those might be goody alone, but I'm going with 10 included. Everybody, everything there.
10? That seems low to me.
Really? You think so?
Yeah.
Because sometimes they get away from the mics because the mics are set up in certain areas, right?
Yep.
If we had one right between the benches, which there isn't,
yep.
They're at either end, then for sure, man, you'd be looking at...
Who is the most prolific swearer on the Ottawa Senators in your many years now of producing the games at the rink?
It's always hard to tell, right?
Yeah, I know.
To know for certain.
But you know who's on the ice and who's, you know.
Out of the current bunch, who would you go with? I'm going Austin Powers for sure.
Because they just fly by and it's just an F-bomb.
Yeah.
Or
I think Austin Powers, even in a general conversation with family.
I'm going to take this away from the Sens.
Yeah.
The refs really swear a ton.
Oh, do they?
They drop a lot.
Okay.
And they're just swinging by the mics.
As in, F off, that wasn't a penalty? Yeah.
Exactly. Just some banter, just some chatter. We should
have an F off between Sheldon Keefe and Smitty.
See, the mics aren't that close.
Yeah. Oh, but Kiefer there. Kiefer throws,
behind the scenes, at least. Yeah. I don't know. Behind the bench, it looks like
he
does,
too. Oh, he's a lot. Or actually have him and Paul Maurice head-to-head, just screaming.
As loud as they can.
Because that's even better when the coaches, when there's no crowd JR and you get the replay you don't like. Paul Maurice is beautiful. Go up in the air so you can catch the mic.
Yeah.
Or even if you're really a good coach, go up on and stand right into the mic and yell into it.
So should Cam have us in delay just in case there
Big
are
red?
Some, yeah, just in case there I, are I, some I, very I, clear I,
no, you know, listen,
swears?
Does little, he know that if a single one slips through, he's fired? I don't want to make him nervous.
No, exactly. So let's not say that.
No, let's make him nervous.
Let's let him know that after.
Let's make him nervous.
Yeah, that.
Yeah. No, although if he gets too trigger happy with the delay button, our actual broadcast could be trailing the play-by-play by 15 minutes.
We need to come up with letterhead. One of my favorite stories of all time, there was a scout that went to a game in Vancouver and was arguing with the parking attendant. And the Vancouver Canucks under Brian Burke went to the draft that year, and they brought a full letter from the RCMP and everybody else, and a full complaint and a lawsuit, and presented it. This is all, it was one of our scouts in Washington.
Right.
And we did this at the draft, and it was terrific. So I think we've got the ability here, JR, to set up something through the, who is it, TRC, or what are they called?
The CRTC?
CRTC. It's out near car.
The TSA. The TRC. Wow. Good okay. morning to all the fine folks working at the TRC
yes,
today.
Some of our favorite people.
Out in VARs.
Yes. Yes. That's our headquarters.
That place does exist.
In VARs.
Unlike the TRC.
All right. So empty building tonight. Don't know who the goalie is going to be. I think we both suspect that it should be Matt Murray and will be Matt Murray, but we'll wait and see on that announcement to come today. There is no game day skate today. And I'm not sure whether this is going to be one of these things that DJ Smith keeps secret until they skate out on the ice at 6:30 tonight, or whether they bleed that out a little bit earlier. But it looks like we'll see the same lines as we saw finish the game in Edmonton, the big comeback win. So that includes Tyler Ennis skating with Norris and Tkachuk, and Batherson playing with Stützle and Paul. And then that fourth line, which somehow, some way, I'm not sure how, chipped in with two goals on Saturday in the third period in the comeback. And not so much Alex Formanton. He has been really hot. He's got 9 points in his last 8 games. But Chris Tierney and out of the press box, Adam Gaudette. Gaudette had one of the goals in that comeback. Now, he took a really bad penalty in the second period, and I thought, if you want to cement yourself to a lifetime in the press box until you leave the team, that was the way to do it. But he redeemed himself by getting that goal in the third period.
Yeah, I don't know options. Old Sabby's hurt, so as far as you kind of go through it. And...
Well, it's the Bishop of Clark is the only other forward that's on the team right now.
Yeah.
And back on defense, same again, Holden didn't practice yesterday, but should be good to go. So it's Shabbat and JBD and Brandstrom and Brown and Zub and Holden. Those should be your 6D for tonight, which segues beautifully into our TSN 1200 Tool and Equipment Store web poll question for you today. We're talking about the young Sens defenseman, of which we will see two of the three in the lineup tonight. Who will be with the Senators the longest? So we're looking for a prediction. We're not asking you who you think should be here, just you're looking at how the team sees this. Mm-hmm. Who will be with the Sens the longest? Mm-hmm. Jacob Bernard Docker, Erik Brännström, and I'm not sure why I'm saying it the way that I am, or Lassie Thompson. Lassie, come home. All right, who is currently down in Belleville and actually scoring some goals lately. All right, JBD, Erik Brännström, Lassie Thompson, who will be with the Sens the longest? So you're looking at it from the team's perspective, not yours. So actually, Hammer, let's go to you first. I'm going to go second, and then Simmer jumps on the gravy train.
Okay, my vote for this, I'm going to go with JBD. Will be here the longest because I think for his skill set, you can pretty much go up and down any pair and he can fit in nicely. 5 or 6, 3 or 4, 1 or 2, which makes him very versatile and useful. And it's nice to stick around. Injuries, what case? You can move him up, move him down. So I think it's going to be JBD.
I am also saying that Jacob Bernard Docker will be the guy for many of the reasons that you stated. I think he's a steady Eddie. I don't think he's a top-pairing defenseman, in my opinion, but I think he is an NHL-caliber defenseman, and I think as soon as next season, he's a full-time NHL player. Mm. And I think when it's all said and done, if some of the other guys flesh out like they hope and Jake Sanderson steps right in and he's to start at least a top 4D, I think that Jacob Bernard Docker is kind of, you know, if I look at it and I go, Jake Sanderson, Jacob Bernard Docker, that seems like, and I'm, you know, I'm going like 2 to 3 years down the road when they've both got their feet under them and they're both established. I could see that as a really, really nice combination with Sanderson coming in and you know, moving up at times and playing with Shabbat and all that other stuff. I look at that. So I agree with you. Lassie Thompson, I mean, he's really, really improved, I think, in the eyes of a lot of people. And I think for Erik Brännström, listen, he's played good, really good hockey lately. I think we all agree he should be in the top six. But I don't know. I really don't know that the organization and the coach in particular see him at 5'9", which may be generous, as a guy when you start to play playoff hockey is going to be able to stand up. Yeah. So I think he may be here for, you know, beyond this season and playing in the NHL, but I don't think it's a long term thing for Erik Brännström. That's what I feel right now. Simmer.
Yeah, no, same thing. And JBD, as far as a top-pairing defenseman, maybe not top, but top four, and it's all about who he's with. And if he went into next year, with Zubin Chabot. He is a 3-4 with Sanderson, and then Zaitsev is still here and mixing some other pieces. I think that's realistic. Now, as far as Branstrom will just be interesting, are they going to go down the path again of, hey, I don't think it's perfect in what that would even match up for next year. But my, oh my, if you're going to go big, at least go to guys that can play a little bit, like a Holden, if you're going to do it. So I'll agree. And as far as Branstrom, yeah, I just don't personally, and this isn't even just where Ottawa's at. Yeah, I don't see where this player is going to be dynamic enough, JR, where on any team in the National, and not that he's not going to find work necessarily, but I don't look at this as a, you know, all of a sudden this guy's going to get away and be the next Phil Housley. He's deficient in some areas. As much as he's decent or very good and up and running, a great first pass, he's just not dynamic enough for the size.
There are many people who right now would disagree with you on that. When you say he's not dynamic, in what way are you saying?
Oh, just as far as the skating, you know, and you even watch his gap control when he's defending for a guy that size. Like, you know, I talk about...
Is that not something you can improve, though?
No, not really, no. And people keep using kind of his age. No, when I talk about the Brian Rafalskis and Kimmo Timonens and different guys, even Spurgeon, yeah, they're skating, their feet down lower, just night and day. He's not great, and he's not great at that. Now, the escapability, I'll watch a little as we go further. People are talking, you know, his first step behind the net. I want to see against some other teams here and as we go along, but I think that's really hard to end up getting away from and to long-term continue to get bumped a little bit. And like I said, once inside the offensive zone, he does some real good things, but the deficiencies of the lack of size down low, I don't think he'll be able to overcome that.
Yeah. The thing is going to be for Branstrom, I think, going forward, and again, they paid a huge price or gave up a huge piece, and he was the centerpiece coming back. That appears to be, at this point, a misstep in the case of the general manager in terms of what he gave up and what he got in return. But that being said, there are three paths forward for Eric Branstrom. It is one of he is a long-term piece here in Ottawa. I think the second is that he is a, for lack of a better term, a placeholder for the foreseeable future until they have their established top six. And they are a playoff team, et cetera. And at that point, maybe you have moved on from him. And the other is that they move on from him sooner rather than later, be it at the trade deadline, or I think the better possibility would be in the summer that they would move on from him. And listen, there is nothing wrong with him playing really good hockey. If you still have the intention that you don't think he's the long-term answer, if he plays really good hockey, listen. If you can market him, it only takes one other general manager to absolutely love the guy and have a great grade on him from back in his draft year and see, hey, with Ottawa this year in the last 50 games, he played really good hockey. I'm willing to take him on. Yeah. So I think there are three paths for Branstrom. Gone by the end of this year, placeholder for a couple of years until the team is a playoff team, or here for the long term. And that's what I think the next 51 games is going to help establish.
Yeah, you're right there. And the contrast of, I'll use a couple of somewhat recent. You could also be a Victor Mete, where you come in with all kinds of promise, and then basically you run your course in an organization and end up on waivers. Or you could end up being Mr. Rundblad, where for whatever the timing was, evaluation of Arizona at the time, basically trading him straight up for Kyle Turris. Yeah, I mean, you really never know what the other 31 teams are thinking. I do think prospects in Canada, the evaluation and the spotlight, I do think is a little bit different personally, because there's so much discussion, so much talk, so much kind of decision, and not that they're not heavily scouting every other team, but boy, it's a different ballgame. You know what I mean? And Montreal, they pretty much just ran the course with Mete, right? And was there a time where you could have evaluated? And hey, that's the trick of the business, is understanding right away what the hell do you have versus necessarily running it completely its course. And I'll use that in the case of a guy like Brown.
700 votes in so far in our web poll question. Jacob Bernard Docker is the runaway winner at about 67% of the votes. 26% are on Thompson, and just 7% are on Eric Branstrom. And again, our question, just so everybody understands it, is you're looking at this from the Sens point of view, not what you personally think, but what you think the Sens will do, who's going to be here the longest.
I got vetoed by Hammer, but I would have put out, my thought was, who do you think has the better upside? Do you think that the vote would be on Branstrom at this point?
By the listeners?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, we all suffer from, you know, not revisionist history, but
recency
bias.
Yeah.
Recency bias, and everybody's just kind of been waiting for this guy to do something. And for the last few games, I don't want to, dynamic is a very strong word, but you've seen kind of flashes of maybe what people had talked about. But I think a lot of us get kind of sucked into the flash and dash of puck on stick. And a particularly with defensemen, this is something that I watch. Mm-hmm. I really like watching defensemen in particular. Mm-hmm. You watch what they're like without the puck and how they defend in their own end and that sort of thing. I know part of defense now especially is, can you get the puck out of your own end? Yeah. Can you do that? And he can do that more than a lot of guys they've had back there. But you also need to, the word is defensemen. You need to be able to defend. Yeah. That part of it, I think, is still, for me, TBD on Eric.
Yeah, Benson. And the other part, Jair, is just working with a partner. And for him, what you'd ideally like at that size is that any time I need him as an outlet, he's just so darn fast, almost like an Eric Carlson, that he can escape. What unfortunately does happen is under the forecheck, it becomes a lot of chaos. And also, I mean, I think in a positive way, I mean, it is really, as you said, with Lassie Thompson, this is really fast-tracked nicely. And another summer, I think another summer for JBD. And hey, there's still a long ways to go to rebuilding the hockey team. But I think in some pretty big pillars of this whole thing, you start to see. And then really also when Jake Sanderson coming in, realistically, I think we should get a pretty good idea of what he's capable of both the rest of this year, but going into next year, right? I think you can set your, you know, your what your thoughts are versus necessarily. The hype is so high right now. Let's see when he arrives here, and let's see come Olympics times. He's going to be playing against some very good competition.
Real quickly on this, just as a brief aside. So Chris Pronger had his number 44 retired by the St. Louis Blues last night in a ceremony. You know that the raising to the rafters part of the sweater, going to the rafters part, is too long when the player being rewarded is actually having conversations with the people, his wife and his kids and whoever else is. So last night, as the 44 is rising from the ice to the rafters, Tom Cochran's Big League kicks in, okay, which is, I get it, it's a hockey song, but it's a sad song. Yeah. The guy dies, okay?
And he was going to U.S. college, not Peterborough.
Yeah, well, exactly. And so, okay, so the song starts and you're thinking, there goes the sweater up to the rafters in St. Louis. Yeah. They played the entire song. He was on the ice standing there for 3.5 minutes while his sweater is going to the ceiling in St. Louis, to the point where I'm watching it because they tweeted out the entire thing, the Blues. They're thinking this is the greatest thing ever. And I'm thinking to myself, Chris Pronger must be wondering, how much longer does this song going to go on before we can end it? It looked very uncomfortable. Yeah. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. And he even had a beer during it, having fun. And I would have rather seen they just put the spotlight on and there's Hully out with Gloria.
That would have been better. Hey,
and he's probably a bit lit up already anyway.
Now, our friend Noodles, Jamie McLennan, because the Blues put this out as well yesterday as part of before Chris Pronger, said, arguably the greatest NHL defenseman of all time was part of the Blues, talking about Chris Pronger, to which I retweeted and said, who said that? Not knowing it was actually Jamie McLennan of TSN that apparently said Chris Pronger, quote, arguably the greatest NHL defenseman of all time. Now, I love Noodles. Good guy. Good broadcaster. I mean, is Chris Pronger in the top 10 defensemen all time, Simmer? I mean, we're not going to compare him to Bobby Orr.
Oh, no,
let's
no.
Let's start with Bobby Orr. And yeah, I understand you're catering to the hometown team and all that other stuff.
Let's go into his era, even. And first of all, we're going to go Bobby Orr. We're going to go Dennis Botfan,
yes.
Right? Now, you'll get into some debate or whatever on the Paul Coffeys of the world because he was an offenseman.
Can I bring up some other names for you that were put out by people?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
So this is old school. People won't remember. Yeah. Doug Harvey, way back in the day.
Yeah.
But players that people might remember. Okay, Larry Robinson. You mentioned Paul Coffey. Yeah. Scott Niedermeyer. Nick Lidstrom. Yeah. Brian Leetch.
Yeah.
And Ray Bourque.
Yeah.
Just off the you know, there's a tensome right there. Yeah. Is Chris Pronger belong in that group?
Oh, he does, absolutely. Yep. Now, is he better than Brian Leetch? Absolutely. I mean, Brian was a real good player. I always make the argument Zubov was better than Leetch. Was he better than Nick Lidstrom? Not a chance, right? I mean, Nick Lidstrom, hey. Now, Ray Bourque, you start getting into those conversations for sure, JR, but the cementing of, you know, the real, real elite group, if I was to pick a big three, I'd go Bobby Orr, I'd go Dennis Potvin, I'd go Lidstrom, Niedermeyer, and then there's some conversation after that, and I'm probably forgetting many people. And I was a fan of Larry Robinson as a kid, Jer. I couldn't really be honest about, you know, the way I perceive him. So I'd go anywhere from 80s on. You know, was he the best Blues defenseman to ever put on a uniform? Well, you could argue that between him and Al MacInnis even. So there you go.
Yeah, for sure. There you go. Well, we'll turn things over to Steve Lloyd, Chris Stevenson, and Kenny Walls. Maybe they'll carry the debate further.